This episode is brought to you by Fat Expats. It's the new expat magazine that's coming your way next month. If you'd like to find out more about it, head over to twofatexpats.com. You'll see a pop-up and you can sign up and we'll shoot you some information. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you, Kirstie Rice. I'm just packing my own packages of hydroxychloroquine.
Did I really see this morning? Because I didn't catch the news. I was up and on the road at 7 a.m. to take two of my children back to boarding school. But did I really see a glimpse that Trumpy, as my kids call him, that Trumpy's been drinking some bleach?
Not the bleach, the malaria tablet, the malaria pills. I don't know. The world is the most bizarre place I've ever seen. You read the news and you think it's not news. It's hard to say. It is a crazy world out there, Kirstie Rice. This is, of course, if you're listening in 5 or 10 years, this is the...
Hey, in 5 or 10 years.
The coronavirus.
It could still be going.
That's COVID-19. Yes. That's COVID-19 in case we're up to COVID-25 or 26. My. The world's gone cray. So you've taken your kids back to school. So that must mean Australia is still, and South Australia in particular, is still... zero transitional cases.
We are. Zero transitional cases. Zero cases anywhere. No one in the hospital.
Zero cases in your household.
Zero cases in my household. My son got the clear. He was in the clear on Monday, so he was able. He enjoyed a lovely long weekend thanks to a faulty thermometer, it appears.
So he was fine. Did you keep him isolated in the house? Did he have ISO within ISO until he got the all clear? Or did you sort of think he's all right?
Yeah, well, we kept him, well, we knew, like we were a 99.99% sure that he was fine. But of course, you don't want to be the goose that says that and then finds out that you happen to be the very first fresh case out of nowhere. But anyway, we did. We kept him in ISO. We didn't let him out. He had plans to go and visit his girlfriend, and it was like, no, oh, sorry,
bud. Have
you
already seen her since the lockdown?
No, he still hasn't seen her.
Oh, no.
Yes, she was down at the beach this weekend too, so that got squashed. He didn't get to go and have pizza with the neighbours who were having a party for 9 because, you know, you can only have a party for 10.
And if he'd gone, there would have been 10 of them.
That's right. He's back at school and it's very funny. I dropped both him and his sister off this morning, and within half an hour of dropping them off, they had both put in their leave forms to leave the boarding house on Friday and come home again this coming weekend. So I always think that's very cute that they get there and the first thing on their mind is, I'm booking in my next leave pass to get out of here.
Now, they're not weekly boarders, are they? Like they – is there such a thing as weekly – so when I went to boarding school, Kirstie,
yes,
there were no weekly boarders. And you were
– Was that back in the horse and cart?
That's right, when I had to walk with bare feet through snow. There were no weekly boarders in our boarding house. So you had to stay in – you could, of course, always go out for a weekend every now and again, but there were rules around you had to be in for the first 3 weeks or 4 weeks of term before the first, we called boarders exit weekend. Mm-hmm. And then everyone was free to go to their own house or someone else's house, etc.
Yes.
But it seems to me now, my brother says, you can go out whenever you want. Yep. You can, you know, go out after school. You can go every weekend.
Yep.
It's not really that sort of old school boarding environment.
And this is an interesting thing for the expat kid, right? Because the expat kid comes from overseas and they get to boarding school. And yes, they're planning those exits every sort of 3 weeks. They tend to be 3 weeks, is maybe one a year where you've got a 4 week break. But of course, to the expat kid, it's like, okay, well, I'm going to go to granny's, or I'm going to go to Auntie Flo's, or I'm going to go to mum's friend from school, or I'm going to do whatever. But then there are these kids that are from their hometowns and maybe only 2 hours out of the city. And so they seem to go home all the time because it's easy. It's really easy to go home. And so it does create that issue of, are you going to be in the boarding house on your own, or are there going to be other people? Now, what tends to happen with us, my kids, when I'm not in the country, are very much, you know, they only leave every exit and they spend all their other time in the boarding house. If I'm in the country, I'm a 45-minute drive from them, and I usually pick them up every Friday night. Sometimes I pick them up on a Thursday and then take them to school on Friday and then do my thing and we pick up.
Oh, that sounds way too much hard work to get up early on a Friday to take them to school.
No.
You're a good mum.
Well, there's people that do it every day from where I live.
Yes, they're day students. They're not actual boarders. Yes.
And, Nikki, there will be a lot of people listening to us now going, well, 45 minutes is my everyday commute.
That's right. And but I guess a long, long time ago, before they fixed the roads, it was longer than 45 minutes to where you are now.
It must have been.
Fix the roads, I say in inverted commas.
Anyway, Nikki, we digress. Let's get on with our show for today. We are going to kick off with our four fact questions.
Welcome. And talking about our four fact questions, boarding school is in it.
Ooh.
So that's why I was going down the boarding school path.
Ooh. Oh, excellent. There you were being all clever and doing a, what do you call it?
A segue.
Yes. There you were doing a segue and I missed it.
Well, you know, we can't all be as chipper as I am at 6 o'clock in the morning. Okay, so I was thinking about boarding schools, Kirsty. So in other countries, so your children go to boarding school now in the same country you're in, but a lot of expats' kids now. But if world was normal, in inverted commas, and, you know, G was fine and you guys were all back in Qatar, your children would be in another country. So boarding schools post-corona, would you be less likely to do it with so many unknowns with international travel and borders and everything? So you're now looking at putting your fourth child into boarding school. If you were back at number one, starting again, would you reconsider?
Yeah, I think I would, Nikki. Right now, if things were like they are right this minute, yeah, well, how could you? Because you would not know what was going on. So I think it comes down to a couple of things. What are your resources on the ground? Like for me, when this all happened, because this exact thing, I guess, happened to us in that we had children here in boarding school and I could see corona was spreading, pardon the pun, and it was that feeling of, hang on, at what stage do they stop letting people into the country, or, you know, what happens when the school shuts down and where do they go if I'm not there? You know, how do I feel about them going to stay with my parents, which, you know, my parents are in their mid 70s and would be susceptible and compromised, as would my mother-in-law, who's over 80 now. So neither of those things seemed an option. So it would be then calling on sisters and sister-in-laws. So if I was someone that had someone starting at boarding school next year, I mean, I'm feeling optimistic for how things will happen next year. And you would think that next year you might be okay. But we don't know, do we? We just don't really know what we're playing it with. And we're all just waiting for the future to unfold at the moment. So I would be apprehensive with number one. And I feel that your child as well would feel that. There would be nothing worse than a child. I mean, that was one of the things I was always able to say to my first child who went to boarding school was, it's a direct flight. I will be on that plane in a heartbeat. You know, she knew that there was a flight that went every night. If she needed me, I would be on that plane and to her immediately. Now, if I had to say, I'll be on the first flight home and then it's only 14 days of quarantine and I'll come and get you. It kind of doesn't have the same reassuring feel, does it?
And if the first flight is twice as expensive and half as often,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, all these unknown things. So I'm asking you this question with an underlying thought process is that my daughter is still adamant that she wants to go to boarding school in Australia, and that's now about 12 months away. And the other thing my husband said was, well, we haven't even seen the school. I mean, we went at Christmas, we weren't able to see it because they were closed for tours, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So how could you even go to a school you haven't even seen? And how could you? And it's not a direct flight, it's not a one flight, and it's not this and it's not that. And I just don't think she can go. And I said, well, that's awesome. You can explain that to her. So I came down the hallway yesterday to hear a very animated conversation going on in the kitchen about if I would go to boarding school or if I would not. And I think my husband chickened out, let's be honest. I think he didn't go the full way with the conversation. He said, we can have that with her over summer. And I said, it's not my conversation to have, buddy.
I think it's just something you can't even discuss until December. Do you know, I think if it was me, I'd be saying, okay, we're going to get all of our ducks in a row that, yes, you can start there if you need to start there, but realistically, none of us know how this is going to pan out and we need to just shelve this until December and then let's talk about it again.
Yeah, no, and that's what I said. I said there's no way we can even know till December because there's no way we even know when Australia's opening their borders right now.
Mm.
I mean, there are so many people going to airports and or not going to airports or whatever and fronting up. And I read something yesterday about a guy coming back to Hamburg. His father passed away last week in Ireland. So he hopped a flight to Ireland to go to his father's funeral. He went back to the airport yesterday and they denied him boarding on the plane because he couldn't prove he was an essential worker.
Oh, no.
And he said, and he asked in a Facebook group, has anyone had this experience? And I said, well, no, because I'm bringing colleagues back. So now, yes, on Sunday I had someone fly back from Milan and they're now in their home for 14 days quarantine. I had to drop around a power cord for a computer monitor last night just into the letterbox. And so I know that people are getting in just with its registration paper. So in Germany, when you move, you have to register with the city. And so they give you a piece of paper to show that you're registered as living in the city. And that's all the people that I've brought back have had to show. But in this case, it seems that the airline took it upon themselves to deny boarding. And it turns out it was an error. So he's called the embassy, the German embassy and the Irish embassy, and both of them have said, no, you should have been able to board. So there's just so many unknown things if you just front at the airport and something like that happens.
Yeah, yeah. No.
Crazy, crazy.
Okay, Nikki, moving right along. If you were moving this summer, what are some of the additional hurdles you could envisage? What do you think people should possibly be thinking about?
Well, if I was moving this summer, I'd be in a lot of trouble because I'm looking around now and there's nothing packed. look, I don't really know. I would think that there's all sorts of shenanigans going on in that you might not be able to move, but you could pack your stuff off and send it theoretically because there are shipping and you know, movement of things is going on still, but movement of people is the one that's restricted. So,
yeah, I saw exactly that on our Facebook group. Someone said never in their life did they ever think that their shipment would get to the location before they did. And they had packed off their shipment and had their date planned. And of course, their flight got cancelled and their flight got cancelled and their flight got cancelled and their shipment ended up getting there before them because they kept waiting for another 3 weeks and another 3 weeks. You know, that's how long this has been going for, in case you were wondering, that long.
I would also think that often, I mean, since January, travel's been dodgy in the terms of people have been really looking at travel and whether it's essential or not. And I would think that some people haven't been for a look-see, so some people haven't been to see where they're moving to. They haven't been able to establish any understanding of what their new community might look like or visit a school that their child might go to or, like, you know, when you go to see a place and you've looked at places online, you think, oh, that looks awesome, you know, that flat looks great or that house looks good, and then you get there and you're like, oh, no, okay, now I see what's happening here. If it looks like this, then this is the reality. If it looks like this, this is the reality. And I think there might be lots of people in situations who don't even know where they're going to and haven't even visited and are just like real old school expat stuff, just have to turn up and not knowing when they're going to turn up.
And I can't imagine the stress, like not only that you can't rely on the flights, but you know that you can't rely on the rental accommodation either, whether it's an Airbnb or whatever it is. But the thing is too, I know when I left Doha in such a rush when we left, I was terrified about the whole temperature checks. And I was thinking, you know, what if one of us sneezes or coughs or I have a hot flush or, you know, something happens. Heaven forbid it was my first son who seems to run hot and cold with great regularity.
Apparently now.
So you'd be thinking, what if I can't get on that plane? Just like that terrible story you told about the gentleman trying to go to the funeral, just the fear of not getting on that flight. It's quite desperate to miss. I wondered too, Nikki, people need to look at, I guess, if real estate agents are operating where they're moving to. I know our real estate agents here in South Australia still aren't doing open inspections. They only do private bookings. So there's all sorts of things going on, and also what the market is forecasting for rentals. This could be a good situation for expats in that because so many Airbnbs got shut down because you suddenly couldn't do Airbnbs, there's a glut of rentals on the market. So I imagine it's a good place to try and find a rental.
It might be, it might not. So I've got another colleague coming back from Italy, from Naples, and he's trying to get an Airbnb just to – so he gave up his accommodation when he left because he was subletting and his landlord was from Spain. And he can't get an Airbnb. He's had real troubles getting an Airbnb. And people have just said, no, I don't rent to people not from Germany. And which in normal times, again, in putting my fingers up and air quotes, just wouldn't happen. But at the moment, people are feeling so, obviously, people are feeling very nervous about what that means. Like he's coming from Italy. So that's, I mean, Italy has been Corona Central for some time. And if you did any research at all, there's been hardly any cases in the south, which is where he's coming from. But it's just a whole process where, you know, if you can get an Airbnb and then you get approved and everything, and then they say, oh no, sorry, you're not German, so we're not renting it to you. So, I mean, there's all those kinds of stuff that, you know, and lots of people do temporary accommodation for sort of the first 6 to 8 weeks anyway.
Yeah.
And how's that going to look? Do you want to be living in serviced apartments where people are coming in and out all the time? You know, the cleaning, people are coming in and out to clean. There's all sorts of things that you have to consider. Are you a high risk, medium risk, low risk family? Do you move with your family? Are people considering their spouse or the person who's with the job who has to go? Are they considering them going and then just hanging out till later?
I reckon there'd be quite a bit of that, Nikki. I do think there would be a bit of that of you go alone, you get sorted, and then we'll come later. Because what does the quarantine unpack process even look like? You know, usually the quarantine unpack process is 10 people traipsing in and out of your house and up and down your stairs and rifling through your things. It is the
and breathing heavily because they're shifting large pieces of furniture
and sweating all over everything, and you're handing out glasses of water and all sorts of things. Like, yeah,
I don't know. I mean, there are just so many unknowns, and it just adds that whole we always talk about, it's an extra layer when you're an expat, but this is an extra layer that you really don't know. Mm-hmm. I just it's very hard. So Kirsty, yes. On that note, leaving rituals. So how do you leave a country or a school well in normal times? What was the normal leaving rituals, and how did you make sure that you wrapped it all up so you felt ready to move on? And then what are they now during the time of Corona.
It's a tough one, Nikki. It's like, how do you say goodbye to someone or something that isn't there? We have a lot of people at the moment who are stuck in one location. Maybe they evacuated or they went home to check on a relative or they did something that got them out of their country and now they can't get back in. And I know someone personally that this has happened to. Her husband's job has ended while she's been there. He's been repatriated early, so she hasn't been able to go back. She's looking at 11 years of her life where she was such an active member in a community.
Gosh, that's a long time. 11 years is really tough. That's really your home.
That's right.
And to have to walk away with nothing, with no sort of closure on that is very tough. No personal closure. I think like the saying goodbye without hugging someone, I don't even understand that concept yet. I'm sure it's going to come. I mean, there are people here leaving over the summer that I won't get to see and I certainly won't get to hug even if I see them. So I think that that's a really tough concept when your whole life you've done something one way and then you have to turn around and try and do it another way.
And it comes back to the expat thing, doesn't it, of when I think about my particular friend. So at 11 years in the one location, two kids that she's put through school, volunteered, been a huge member of the community, and then you're gone. You don't get any of the goodbyes. You don't get any of the packing of the rooms, because I mean, for her particularly, her sons have grown and gone to university, so there's that. It's the empty nest as well, and shutting down those rooms that were their rooms that will no longer exist. But I think what is particularly hard for the expat is the lack of understanding from elsewhere. And I see it with my youngest, in that people think that he should just be so happy to be in Australia and he's so lucky.
Yeah, it's so tough for him right
yeah
now.
And I look at him and I think everybody just I heard someone say to him on the weekend, you know, so what are you going to do about school? And he explained it as he has dutifully over and over and over again, you know, to everybody about, well, you know, we don't know what's going to happen and we don't know if we can get back into the country yet. And even if we do get back in the country, then we don't know if we could get home for Christmas for quarantine. And so I don't know. I'm kind of weighing up if it makes more sense to stay here. And the minute those words come out, you can see anyone local goes, well, that's fantastic. That's great. You know, of course, that's great. You must be really happy that you can stay here and you can go to school with your brothers and sisters and you can do this and you can do that and, you know, how great your life's going to be. And you could see that it's like, you know, he has a really great life elsewhere. It's just that you don't see it.
Yes. I 100% know that with your neighbours. That's right. I have that feeling. And it's not, but it's the not seeing, right? It's the not seeing that is the thing. So they don't see him in that environment. They don't see you guys in that environment. So they don't know how full and real your life is. They just think of it as something else. And so I think it's a grief process almost that you have to – people will have to really consider it in the same way that Corona is, or COVID-19 is – impacting people's mental health in different ways because of isolation or other things, exacerbating existing conditions or whatever. I think that this is another one of them, that the goodbyes, the, you know, the families that can't see their relatives in the hospital, you know, and can't go to a funeral, etc. It's not obviously to that level, but it's the same thing, like leaving your whole life and going somewhere else. It's in the same realm, is that it is a grief process, and you have to, you know, if you don't get to do it the way you want to, then you're already a little bit upset or a little bit sad. But if you don't get to do it at all, then that's a whole other thing. I saw in the Facebook group, one of the people was saying that they're leaving the States for the first time to move to Oman, and they can't do any of the traditional things that they felt they would do. They haven't even done it yet. They haven't even done a leaving ritual. They don't have any rituals or emotional cleansing that they've already done. You know, they just – and so that would also be really tough. And I must say, when I first saw it, I thought, oh, well, it's your first time. You know, suck it up. And then I thought, no, actually, the first time might be the hardest time, in that if you don't get to leave, then how do you, particularly because when you're leaving the first time, it's everything you've ever known. It's not, you don't have the whole, oh, when we left this country, this happened. And when we left this country, that happened. And, you know, this country's not big on that or whatever. Or remember that time we couldn't do this when we left that country. It's none of that. It's just your first time, and this is how you think the whole world should work. And it's not working that way. I mean, it's tough. Yeah. It's tough stuff.
Dana in the Facebook group said she had friends that left and that they did the whole, you know, driving past the house and, you know, did the giant parade, which we've seen a lot of in this time. She said then they had a giant Zoom party where they all had drinks. And I think that's lovely. But I also think, you know, Nikki, I had said in the Facebook group about how when we had left Libya very quickly and I hadn't had a chance, I'd gone home for the Christmas, hadn't had a chance to go back and say goodbyes because we got moved over the Christmas period. And it was really, really hard. I'm sure I've talked about this before, but one of the biggest things for me that really helped me was before I'd gone home for the Christmas, I'd been to the Medina and seen some salt and pepper shakers. And it's not even the salt and pepper shakers. You know what it is? It's that when I was standing there looking through the window, I kind of absentmindedly said, oh, aren't they sweet? I'd love to get them. I'll come back when I've got some money and I'll come back and get them. And it's the fact that someone remembered that and that they thought about that and they went back and they got them. So they put them in my shipment so that when I opened my shipment sort of 6 months later, there I was standing in my lounge room in Canada opening, and there was these salt and pepper shakers that I'd completely forgotten about. But it instantly took me back to that moment of standing with girlfriends in this beautiful, you know, sunny day in the Medina in Tripoli with them. And that's what you want. You want those moments of, it's the people once again. It's not the place. It's, you want to remember those people and the things you did with those people and what was important to you at that time.
And do you, can I ask you something, Kirsty? Was Libya pre or post the start of Facebook?
Pre.
Okay. So you had Facebook in Libya. So do you feel now?
No. Libya was
pre-Facebook. Pre-Facebook. Okay. Yeah. So do you, then when Facebook started, did you go and find those people online and hook up with them? And so do you feel more or less close to those people online than you do to people from Houston or Calgary or Jakarta or KL?
That is a great question. I did reconnect with all of those people. I think most of those people. Now, this is a tough one because then it comes down to how long were you in a location, you know, what was the relationship then to there? So I don't think I can compare about whether I feel closer to them or not, but it's definitely different. Why? What do you think, Nikki?
Well, I don't really know. It's just that sometimes I think, so I lived in South Africa for 3 years and that is nearly 10 years ago now. And I still feel like I could walk into a room and see all those people and it'd be just like it was. But most, and I'm talking about locals there now for me. But
so is that pre?
That was post Facebook. But what I mean is right, that I'm pretty sure that they've all moved on with their lives. And now I see their kids being sort of 10 years older and I think, oh, wow, look at that. And I make comments and I'm sure they think, why was she commenting on this? I think the way I feel about them is still the same as when I was there, but I'm not sure that they necessarily, are you frozen in time when you leave a place? Do you, is what you were like there, how people always think of you? I'm fascinated by this because I often think that you can go home to Australia and often pick up where you left off with your lifelong friends. And with a lot of other expats, you can do the same. And sometimes you're lucky enough to, I know that you have been lucky enough to be in two locations with the same people on occasion.
Yes.
And then how was that? And I just have this fascination sometimes when I'm looking on social media, I think, oh, I'm going to love that, or I'm going to make a comment. I think all these people must think I'm crazy. And it's just because when I left, this is how I felt this close to them, and that's how I still feel now. That's just for me. It's just a
I still think you can still feel that close to someone, can't you? I mean, I've always got that saying that expat love never dies, it simply relocates. And I truly believe that if you are close with someone in one location, yes, you will change and they will change, but your relationship of how you felt with them and how you both supported each other is going to be exactly the same and just as strong. You know, that's why we as expats always say, oh my God, how fantastic would it be to have all those people in the one room at the one time, like from all those different countries.
Yeah, no, that's true. But would it ever work? I always think. But anyway, back to leaving somewhere and during Corona, I think there's going to be a whole new swath of, you know, ways that people do it, and we're learning as we're going, and we're just going to see how it has to pan out.
And look, my advice would be, because we had Melanie who'd written in, she's leaving Georgia and she's moving back to Melbourne with a newborn, and they've only been there for a year. She said they only have a small amount of physical items and they're just going to take what's needed and donate the rest. But she was wondering, you know, how do you emotionally prepare, because this wasn't kind of in the plan. This wasn't what was meant to happen. And my advice would be, please take lots and lots of photos. We've talked about this many times, of the boring and the mundane, so you've got it there. But say everything you need to say to everybody around you. That's the thank yous and the gratefulness and the people that have really helped you out, so that you don't feel you left not saying what you should have said or done. And yeah, maybe too, I always think it's a big deal to plant something or grow something or leave something of you to go back to. You know, Nikki, talking about Libya and how do I feel about those things, the thing that's happened in Libya is, because of the Arab Spring, there is no one left in Libya that was there when I was there. There's maybe one person who had a small business. I think, what would your advice be, Nikki?
Well, I don't have any. That's what I'm saying. I think that there's just going to be a whole lot of new stuff, and the way you've done it before isn't necessarily the right way. You're just going to have to remember that it was just a different way.
Yeah.
And if you've had, you know, if your children have had parties and whatever, think about what's come out of that. Has it been photos? I mean, my children have always, when they were smaller, we always took lots of photos before we left of them with their friends, and then we had photo boards. So my kids have still got photo boards of their friends from Hong Kong and South Africa that just sort of sit in their rooms. And I say, come and see a photo of this child now. And they're like, I haven't seen them for 10 years. I was like, yes, but I have. I see them all the time on Facebook. So, you know, but I think those kind of things. So you can talk about, you know, there's you know, your friend Johnny. And, you know, remember when you went to Johnny's house and these are the things you did with Johnny? Because I think that's important to remember those, you know, that your life was normal at some point. It was just a regular life. And you were living in that location,
and keep telling those stories. Like, don't be sort of fooled into thinking, oh look, we're gonna sweep all of this under the carpet at the moment because it's just too hard.
Yes.
So you've good got
point. Excellent point.
You've got to keep talking about it. So my kids the other day at the dinner table, this is on Friday night, we're having our takeaway food, whatever. Greg wasn't well.
Drinks, cocktails.
He'd gone to bed, and because it was chemo week. And so, but the four of them were sitting there, and then someone brought up, because at our school we have the talent competition all through elementary school, right? And someone brought up something about the talent competition. And then within moments, they were all in absolute hysterics. On, like, one of them literally fell off the chair laughing because they remembered the kids that had the gymnastics display, who decided to do a gymnastics display, and one of the girls had a broken leg, and they couldn't stop laughing about that for a good 5 minutes of what on earth made this girl still decide to take place in the talent competition when her leg was broken. But then the piece de resistance was when she did a handstand and kicked one of the other girls in the head and knocked her over
with the blaster.
They were in hysterics. And I mean, they're the things I was sitting there watching from afar thinking, oh, I'm so glad you guys have got each other to talk about that, because you wouldn't be able to talk. You know, you'd maybe tell that story to a friend who'd go, oh, yeah, that would have been funny. But unless you'd all been there, do you know, and our kids miss that. So, yeah, don't ever stop talking about it and reminding and looking at pictures of the house and whatever, because, yes, it will be sad, but then it just becomes part of the reality of life. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, part of your story, part of your whole process.
Now, Nikki, just before we move on, we were talking before, I was talking about my lovely friend Shirley, who's, you know, not going to be able to go back and pack up her house. And I don't know if I explained that that's because she does not have a work permit, so she can't get back into the country, which is what's happening with so many people in the Middle East at the moment. And I did see Janet had called on the Fatarati to check out the hashtag bring back UAE residents. Now, Qatar is not in the UAE, so this doesn't apply for Qatar, but it's definitely a similar situation, that there is sort of a movement along of people that have been stranded outside of the UAE for 12 weeks now since the travel ban was implemented. So just something to think about, all those people that are, I guess, temporarily homeless and can't get back to their partners and loved ones.
Yeah, because it's something worth thinking about is, you know, if Shirley's been there for 11 years, there's a lot of people who've been in the UAE for that long or longer, and that is their home, you know, and why were they out of the country? Who knows? There's all sorts of reasons. It wasn't that they were necessarily fleeing because of coronavirus and they felt that they would be better somewhere else. So, you know, they might have been on a business trip or visiting a sick relative or all sorts of things, and then they've been caught out and they're basically living out of a suitcase somewhere in the world, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, so Nikki, last one. You've been a welcome coordinator in the past. Now, have you thought about how you're going to welcome the new families that are coming in for this next school year?
Well, I hope someone's thinking about it. The other day I was thinking, when I think there's still so many graduations and leavings that are up in the air, and I was thinking, goodness, I hope someone's thinking about the welcoming the new people in August, because it's kind of the same thing. You know, by this time of year, to be honest, we're usually being hooked up with our new family. So this family's arriving, they're Australian, they've lived in these countries. You know, do you want to reach out to them and see, you know, they'll be landing in Hamburg over summer. You know, do you want to, you know, get your kids together or take them for a coffee or this or that or the other? And I was just the other day thinking about this, Kirstie, so thanks for bringing it up. But I don't actually know the answer, because getting to know new people is often about, you know, face-to-face contact. It's about having a coffee. It's about deciding if you can be friends or just helping them, showing them, taking them to a supermarket, showing them what something is in this language, you know, showing them a butcher, or, you know, physically being with them to make them feel less apprehensive about a whole range of things about being in a new country. I mean, all our new starters activities, we obviously have a couple of days at school, but then there's lots of things for the parents that are like supermarket tours and walking tours and city tours. And it's all about them meeting each other and them having their own community of new people. So we always say, you've got to have someone in a country who's at the same stage as you, because you can't, you know, you're going through all these things and you have to know someone else going through all those things so you don't think you're crazy. And also, so you don't constantly annoy the person saying, oh my goodness, look at this. I'd never thought about this before. Because the expat who's 4 or 5 years in has heard that every year for the past 5 years. And so, you know, it's really important that the people that are new to a place have someone that they can talk to and feel comfortable with. And oh, so often that is by personal contact. So, yes. I don't know, Kirstie.
Yes. And I guess it's just going to have to be a lot of one-on-one meetings, yes, and chats, isn't it? So my advice to anyone new who's arriving somewhere, you might have to be a little bit pushy on this one, I reckon. Like, usually – the welcome coordinator is organising, you know, the big get together and the coffee morning and the, you know, let's all meet in this place. And maybe that's not going to happen. So don't forget, if you are new somewhere, ask, you know, is it possible for me to have a one-on-one meeting, or can I Zoom with someone? Is that a possibility? Like, I'd be pushing for it a bit more and sort of saying that that's what you need to happen. Is there anyone else staying in our hotel, or is there anyone else, you know, living near me that I could go for a walk with? I think you might have to do a bit more self advocating in this one, which is really bloody hard, but
especially when you're arriving somewhere new in a time exactly like this, where you know, and also you might be coming from a country where mask culture is totally ingrained, and so everyone wears masks all the time, if you're coming from somewhere where there's been no masks, and all of a sudden, like yesterday, I just walked into the supermarket, wasn't thinking, the security guard tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Get out." And I said, "Oh yeah, sorry."
Wow.
And I walked in without my mask.
Yes.
And I mean, that is perfectly fine. And it's compulsory to wear masks in supermarkets. And I said, I was so embarrassed, I almost couldn't go back in because here I was just walking in, listening to my podcast, looking at my phone. And then I looked around and someone tapped me on the shoulder. I was like, oh shit, I don't look like all the other people in this supermarket. I've got to get out.
One of these things is not like the other.
So, you know, there are things like that. You're not only going to have to get used to a new culture, you're going to have to get used to the corona culture and what's going on depending on where you are and how you move to. So it's just another part of the move, but it's just one of those little added extra bits.
Yes. Okay, yeah. Nikki, right. We're short on time, so why don't we go down to sort of two of our favourite things this week, and we'll save one each for next week. What are your two favourite things?
Okay, so two that I would choose this week, Becoming on Netflix. Now,
I've been busting to ask you about this. I saw that it was coming and I thought, now how is Nikki going to feel about this? Because, of course, you went and saw Michelle Obama and you were a little disappointed.
I was.
You thought it was very managed and very scripted. So please tell me, so what was it then like to watch the doco about it?
Okay, so the doco is ostensibly about behind the scenes of the book tour in America. So it doesn't follow her internationally, but it's behind the scenes of the book tour in America.
Got it.
And I have to say, I saw it coming and I was like, am I going to watch it? Because I loved the book and then I was disappointed in the event. And am I going to watch the documentary? And of course I did. So look, it's behind the scenes of the American book tour, and it definitely showed. I was very happy to see that it would show her answering a question, and it would show her with all the different moderators answering the same question. And it was like a carry-on. It was edited so well together that you could see that she was giving the same answer everywhere she went to particular questions. So I'm glad that it didn't try and make it look like every event was a new happening and you were going to get new information, et cetera, et cetera. That was one of the things that I appreciated about it. So it wasn't trying to sell you anything that wasn't true. There wasn't a lot of things that you get to know, like, you know, you get to see her getting in the car and going to the event, and you're meant to think that she's very relatable because she puts headphones in and listens to music. But, you know, she's Michelle Obama, so she's putting headphones in, listening to music, and she's sort of making moves with her body that, you know, I'm not making with my body when I'm listening to music because I'm not that cool. I did enjoy it. I think there were a couple of things that struck me. One of them is her long-term staff. So her current chief of staff, a woman called Melissa Winter, was her first hire in the presidential campaign. So she's been an aide to Michelle Obama since 2007. Now, that's a long time to be with someone.
Yes.
So it just shows, like, you got that. The other thing is that her Secret Service detail, the head of her Secret Service detail now has been the same guy since 2008. He's been in the Secret Service detail. So it just shows that, you know, staff-wise, there's not that much turnover necessarily, and she sort of builds relationships with people and sort of that are long term, and it's always nice to know that about a person.
Yeah,
you know, like I think that that's a nice thing. You feel that's a positive thing. The other thing is, I think they added a few more comments. I think they might have re-edited it. I'm not sure, but there was a little bit more talking about how she felt about voting. So, you know, every time she said. She talked about like the pain of being on stage during the Trump inauguration, and she said, you know, we were there watching that because a lot of our folks didn't vote. It was almost like a slap in the face. So all the people that had voted for Obama didn't actually necessarily turn out in the 2016 election, and then that's how they ended up being on stage having Donald Trump. So all right, so that noise you can hear in the background is my husband. He started his conference calls for the day at 7:30 a.m. Thought I would sneak this in before he
we're all in that, this together. So we're all in this together.
I just went and shut the door and he's on an actual video call and someone said, "Are you all right? Is that okay?" And he's like, "Yeah, no, it's fine." I was like, "Keep it down, shut the door." Anyway, sorry about becoming. So I thought that they edited a little bit to make it a little bit more maybe real because the tour was so stage managed. But I do want to say that they did say why. So they made you understand why everything is just a soundbite, because during the campaign at the beginning, you know, there was a few loose comments. They were on stage. She did a fist bump, and then Fox News broke it down. Is that a terrorist action? You know, fist bumping your husband. Why would you fist bump your husband? Why wouldn't you like hug him or give him a kiss? Or, you know, like, so everything she did that was unscripted during the campaign was really examined to a low level of detail because of this unexpected popularity. And so I think she didn't retreat, but she just decided, okay, well, that's it. I can't do anything spontaneous. I have to think about all the things I do before I do them. And that helped me a little bit to understand why it was also scripted and why it was all put together like that.
Cool.
So I strong recommend. I'd recommend it, especially if you like the book. The other thing is, Kirsty, if I could whistle, I would whistle the opening to a song to you, and I can't whistle. So I'm going to play it I'm going to put it over the editing. But there is a song from the early 90s, and it's called Wind of Change. And I don't know if you remember that at all, Kirsty. You know, follow the Moskva down to Gorky Park. Listen to the wind of change. Now, this song came.
Yes, I know the one.
Now, you remember that, right?
Yes.
So apparently that song was not very big in America, which is so weird to me because I remember it distinctly from that period of the early 90s
as being
quite a big song. Like it's, you know, like 99 Luftballons to me. Like it's just one of those things. Anyway, it's done by a German band called The Scorpions, which I didn't know before now. I just knew the song.
Yes.
Anyway, so there's a new podcast out. It's called Wind of Change, which is the name of the song. And it's about whether the CIA could have written the song for this band and then used it as a cultural tool to bring down the Soviet Union, to encourage the end of the Cold War.
Oh.
And it is honestly a rollicking good yarn. It's just really in today's, you know, every day there's something dramatic going on in politics. If you just look at the background of it all, and this reporter, it's really great, the guy that does it. And they're just the way they tell the story, it's just one of those really well-produced podcasts where it just goes down this little rabbit hole and then they sell you the story and then they say, but what if we told you the story in a different way? And then they sort of retell parts of it and that makes you think of things differently. And so you think of all the things, you know, how you're sold information, how it all works, all this kind of stuff. So it's just – and – it's one of those ones that it's a Spotify release. So if you go to Spotify, you can get all the episodes now.
Right.
But if you're on a regular podcast app, it's just releasing week by week. And I think they're up to sort of episode 2 or 3. But there's 8 episodes.
Uh-huh.
And because I've been doing a big walk every night, most nights.
You've
got time to listen.
Hey, Nikki, just speaking of podcasts, are you still listening to The Rabbit Hole? And did you listen to last week's episode of The Rabbit Hole with PewDiePie? Yes.
100% I did. I listened to that. Yeah.
And did it create a conversation in your house with your teenagers about PewDiePie?
We've talked about PewDiePie in the past in our house. I think we've moved past PewDiePie. PewDiePie used to feature in our house a long time ago. And then the most recent conversations we've had are about, the things that were brought up on the podcast. So about the sort of the Nazi commentary and things like that. And that's, I didn't talk to my teens now about it because the things on that podcast we'd already talked about together.
Yes. So PewDiePie, for anyone who doesn't know, was one of the original YouTube, content people. And because Nikki and I have sons the same age who are both right in that world of PewDiePie, aren't they? So, I mean, I think most parents of our vintage, Nikki, know about PewDiePie and know about what PewDiePie said and have seen PewDiePie in the news. And he is such a controversial character in that. I can't speak for you, Nikki, but I know for me, I float back and forth in between you're so clever to you're just the devil incarnate to no, you're showing people what mainstream media does and you're completely misunderstood and you're showing why you're completely misunderstood and, you are the voice of free speech and whatever, but we've had some great conversations because it's re-brought back because PewDiePie had, for most of us, kind of disappeared for the last, I haven't heard the kids really talking about PewDiePie at all. And what I have really noticed, because I have two boys and two girls, my girls could not be less interested in PewDiePie, don't like him at all, find the humour very boyish and are not at all charmed. My sons think he's a genius and but also see him for what he is,
I found it fascinating because at school, particularly because we're in Germany, there is all this within WhatsApp groups in Germany, in school WhatsApp groups, there is a lot of unnecessary mentions of Nazis and all sorts of things like this and this whole Nazi symbolism and rituals. And then hearing on the podcast and hearing him say, look, we just don't, it's not that big deal to us. It's not you're taking it the wrong way. We're just using it for fun. And I think that I totally got it when he was selling that story, not selling the story, but saying it's not that big a deal for us. But I want to say, but it should be. But I see what he's saying. You can't have the Wall Street Journal do a story on him and be, they're two of the most diverse forms of media there is. The Wall Street Journal, traditional, conservative, whatever, and he is, a Swedish, sort of just totally different, very young. I got what he was saying, and that's part of his genius. I think part of his genius is that people see him as one way, but actually he's so clever, have done the things that he's done and do it the way he's doing it. Rabbit Hole, I'm still totally on board for Rabbit Hole. Change, also a strong recommendation.
And, of course, next week on Rabbit Hole, PewDiePie is going to do his first interview, so how clever is he and how clever a rabbit hole for getting him on there. But of course my son now sees that as a sellout because the whole point of PewDiePie was he was independent and it was all about the savior independence on YouTube and that we didn't want corporations to take over YouTube, that we wanted it to still be single people that were producing their own content, etc.
But he never was. I mean he was in the beginning, but there's no way for years that he's been doing all that by himself. I mean, he has totally other people.
Absolutely.
Like it's not, and then that's the genius of him. Like he has gone from nothing to being, having however many millions of followers and still presenting the fact that this is just something he does in his bedroom. Okay. Anyway, Kirsty,
Nikki, have you watched The Last Dance with Michael Jordan?
No, but I have to because everyone says I do.
No. I don't know if you do. I think it's if you were someone that was into basketball, you know, in the 90s, maybe you do, or you're interested in Michael Jordan, maybe you do, or maybe there'd be an interest in the fact of thinking about whether someone like Michael Jordan would survive now with social media when you watch him on the bus smoking cigars and, you know, it, living a very different life to what a professional sports person has to live. But I have really enjoyed The Last Dance. I think it was today in the news they showed that a pair of signed sneakers that he wore sold for about $560,000, I think it was today. And of course, he's got one shoe bigger than the other. So one's a 31 and one's a, you know, 30 or whatever. But yeah, look, I have enjoyed it. It's well produced. I think it gives you a great insight into that life and how much sport has changed. And the last thing I will say, Nikki, for my other favorite thing while we're talking about sport is, last year I listened to an interview on one of my favorite sort of sporting podcasts with a guy called Ben Crowe, who is Australian. He worked for Nike, I think back in, I want to say in the 2000s. And he came onto this, to the show that I was listening to, which was an SEN podcast with Tim and Gary. But he came on to do an interview and he talked a lot about Ash Barty. Those who don't know, Ash Barty's an Australian tennis player and she was a tennis player.
She's the number one tennis player in the world, isn't she?
And, well, she was a tennis player who gave up tennis for a while and she played cricket. Yep. And she was an Australian cricketer. Yep. And then because she lost the love of tennis and then she came back, and this is where Ben Crowe comes in because he is part of – well, he assisted and was part of that process of – how do we get Ash Barty to enjoy playing tennis again? And so Ben Crowe just speaks so, so well about how to talk to your children about sport and what your children will enjoy hearing from you when it comes to sport. And the most one of the things he says in this interview that I loved was, the best thing you can say to your child is, I really like to watch you play. I just really love to watch you play. Yeah. So that they know that enjoyment. But what I've seen with Ben Crowe is he was meant to have a year off this year. He was going to have a, like what he called a gap year, where he was back in Australia and having a gap year. But of course, this has all gone down. And I've noticed he's popped up on my Insta feed as Mojo Crowe. And if you go to Mojo Crowe on Insta, you'll see there's a lot of his talks and videos and things. And I just think he is really, he's one of those voices of reason and just someone I really enjoy listening to. So that's one I would definitely suggest. He's one of my favorite things this week.
So is there that podcast that you talked about?
Yeah, I'll send you the link for that.
Will we put that in then? Because I'd like to hear that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And it turned out that he ended up being, it was one of those podcasts I listened to him and then Greg came home and said to me, did you listen to that guy on SEN this morning, that Ben Crowe? Wasn't he amazing? And then I heard about a week later that that interview had been downloaded, you know, more times than anything else on the radio station in its, you know, in its lifetime. And, yeah, he's just very calm, very soothing, but talks about, you know, working with sports people and how to get that love of those things that you loved inanely and then somehow they became your job and you didn't like them anymore.
Didn't love them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally get that.
Yes.
Totally get that.
Yes.
Excellent. Well, lovely chatting with you, Kirsty.
You too, Nikki Moffat. And I will talk to you on Friday. We're having drinks on Friday, having coffee.
Drinks on Friday. Maybe I'll shout myself a champagne and orange for breakfast.
Okay. See you then. See you Friday.
Bye.